Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with the Reading Post for Sunday, August 17th. My name's Dan Wimbush and I'm the editor of thetarlhurstend.com, which is an independent Reading fan site and blog. And I'm joined once again by the Reading Post Reading reporter, Charles Watts. Charles, good evening. How are you?
I'm very good, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, not so bad, thanks. Slightly unusual time for us to be recording late on a Sunday night. Usually it's first thing on a Friday, so nice chilled weekend behind us.
Yes, indeed, and 3 points behind us as well, which is always always nice to enjoy something like that over the weekend.
Absolutely, and since we last recorded a week last Friday, it's a draw at Wigan, a win against Ipswich, and a progression into the second round of the League Cup as well. So I think when we were speaking on that podcast about 9-10 days ago now, cautiously optimistic maybe for the season, but I think if you had pitched that set of results to either one of us, I think I would have bitten your hand off. I certainly would have.
Yeah, I think it's been almost a near perfect week, hasn't it? I think we're all a bit worried going ahead of that Wigan game. I certainly wasn't expecting anything from that trip to the DW, and in the end you were really disappointed not to come away with all 3 points, because Reading certainly deserved the win there. They played brilliantly. I was so impressed at how they performed. Especially having gone behind as well, to fight back the way they did, to keep going, plugging away, and then getting the two goals, it was just a fantastic performance. And it was so disappointing to concede so late on to such a nothing goal, really, a big lump into the box and a flick on, and Sean Morrison just lost his man, and it was a goal. But despite the disappointment of obviously losing those 2 points, it was still a very credible performance and a very positive result, and they've certainly taken that on into the two home games that follow.
Yeah, and Newport wasn't exactly the most convincing of performances, but I suppose any time you get three goals at home, and obviously very good for Phil Craig Tan to get his first goal for the club as well. So, and you said progression into round two, and even if that is a trip to Scunthorpe, it's always a welcome thing early in the season. Gives everyone an extra game.
Yeah, I mean, the performance wasn't magnificent, far from it, but you just had to look at some of the results from elsewhere that night that it wasn't an easy day for the sort of supposed bigger championship clubs. A lot of them struggled against the lesser teams, and I thought Newport handled themselves and equipped themselves very well and pushed Reading, but in the end it was three very good goals, I thought, from Reading. I thought they were all excellent finishes, and I think that was just what told in the end. It was just his superior quality at the top end of the pitch. I mean, Pav scored a beauty to get things going. Nick Blackman, who's carried on his excellent pre-season form into the season, which is great, scored a good goal, had gone close a couple of times before that, and then it was obviously rounded off perfectly, really, by Craig Tanner, and it was a really nice moment for him, one that he was very, very proud of afterwards.
Yeah, not too many changes. Usually we're used to seeing a first round of the League Cup as an excuse to use a load of younger players, although I suppose you haven't exactly got the depth to use them. But one change that was made was Alex McCarthy coming in for Adam Federici, who's started the two games, obviously, up at Wigan, but we'll come to the Ipswich game in a minute. But did Alex McCarthy do anything to suggest to you that he should be in ahead of Federici in that game?
Not particularly. I thought he looked very, very nervy, as usual, with the ball at his feet, if not more so than normal, to be honest. I don't know if that was just the pressure of obviously losing a number one spot, that he thought that everyone's eyes were on him on that Tuesday night game. He obviously made a couple of good saves, which you'd expect him to make, but certainly with the ball at his feet, once again, he looked nervy. I thought the crowd were nervy as well when the ball was passed back to him, and that's just kind of feeding through to him. I don't think I wasn't expecting McCarthy to start on Saturday against Ipswich. I don't think he did enough in that game to sort of push Feds for that number one spot. And it certainly seems like Feds is very much the number one keeper in Adkins' mind at the moment.
Yeah, well, Federici came back in for that Ipswich game. He didn't have an awful lot to do, but kept a clean sheet, and he did have one save to make, and he made a good one-on-one stop to deflect it wide. But it was very much a chance for the back five to showcase himself as a whole, because Reading did have their moments, but it was often a backs-to-the-wall effort. And when you can get out of games like that with all 3 points, yeah, maybe you haven't set the world on fire playing like that, but it's such a great learning curve for those younger players, and they've got to be feeling on cloud nine today.
I really enjoyed that game, that win. I've got to say, I thought Reading thoroughly deserved it. I thought they were a better team. I was a little bit disappointed with Ipswich, to be honest, but I thought Reading showed plenty of fight in the first half. I think Ipswich are probably the better team for the first 20 minutes. They had that one goalmouth scramble from the corner, which they nearly took the lead from. But I thought Reading slowly started to get into the game, and they were certainly the 5 minutes before Jake's goal, I thought they were on top, and then they got the goal and then protected it in the second half. You say backs to the wall, but I don't think it was certainly wasn't like all backs to the wall. I mean, McGoldrick got through that one-on-one. It was the only time they really sort of broke through Ipswich, and you know, Feds came out and saved it well. And obviously they had the very late header, which from Tyrone Mings, which Sean Cummings deflected onto the bar. But other than that, I thought Reading were fairly comfortable, and it was obviously they were put under a bit of pressure, but I thought there was a real thou shall not pass type actually from Reading in that one. It was, they were determined to hold on to that win, especially after what happened at Wigan the week before. I think they would have been devastated if they'd let another lead slip, which is why that Sean Cummings header sort of flick clearance onto the bar was so important, because they would have been devastated if that had gone in. And I really enjoyed it, I've got to say. I thought Reading deserved the 3 points, and it just rounded off what's been a fantastic first 7 days of the season.
Yeah, up on the thetarlesson.com, we're running our Man of the Match poll at the moment, and early stage, it's only been up for a day, but Michael Hector is running away with it at the moment, well over 70% of the vote so far. A worthy Man of the Match winner for you?
Absolutely, I thought it was absolutely superb. Outstanding performance, by far and away his finest performance so far since he's come back from that loan spell at Aberdeen. Obviously, there was a lot of pressure on him going into that game because of what happened in the sort of 48 hours preceding. That was Sean Morrison, and I thought he just stepped up and was brilliant. He won every single aerial duel pretty much. He was commanding, he was calm in possession. I think the one time he kind of got caught was when McGoldrick got through. But even then, you know, fair play to him. He carried on chasing and put McGoldrick under enough pressure that he didn't get a clean shot away. And no, I thought he was outstanding. It was, but as I said, by far and away his best moment in a Reading shirt, and thoroughly deserved the Man of the Match.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Sean Morrison and his departure. It all happened really quickly. And I said, we spoke 10 days ago about, you know, possible incomings. It seemed very much a case of Reading adding to the squad. I don't think anyone expected such a key cog to be sold in such, well, dramatic circumstances is probably too strong a word, but for it all to happen within the space of 48 hours and see him on the bench on Saturday, it came as a bit of a shock. What do you understand with the timeline events? Is this move been in the offing for a long time, or was it literally Cardiff came in, Morrison wanted to go?
Well, I don't think it's been in the offing for a long time. I spoke to Morrow on Tuesday night after the Newport game, and you know, I did my preview for the Ipswich match. For Friday's paper, we always have the preview with a player, and that was already written, and it was Morrison talking about stopping J Tab scoring. And so obviously that all had to get completely ripped up just before deadline and get another player on there, because it happened that quickly. But chatting to him on Tuesday, there was absolutely no hint that there was any sort of move at all on the agenda. You know, he was all about Ipswich, and he was crowing about the starts of the season they've had and how pleased he was with the performances and looking forward to the rest of the game. It was just such an absolute shock. You said dramatic, and it kind of was. It just happened out of nowhere. One thing I will say, at Wigan the week before, sitting just behind me was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and I wasn't sure, you know, I figured, I didn't even check the fixture list, but I just figured that Cardiff had Wigan coming up, and I'm not sure they may well have done, but obviously Morrow scored in that game and had a I should say decent performance. I mean, it was his mistake which led to the equaliser, but maybe Ole Gunnar Solskjaer saw something in that prompted him to move. But from my understanding, the bid came in on Wednesday, sort of late Wednesday afternoon, and I'd heard on Wednesday night that Cardiff hadn't had a reply from Reading, that hadn't heard anything back from Reading since the bid went in. And then obviously on Thursday morning, come 9 o'clock, Sean Morrison knocked on Nigel Atkins' door and said he wanted to speak to Cardiff. And I'm not quite sure that Reading had told Morrow that Cardiff had come in for him, which kind of suggests that certainly agents and people working behind the scenes certainly letting the player know that something was on the table. And obviously it was sort of tempting enough that Morrow knocked on the manager's door and said he wanted permission to talk. And I think once a player does that, it's very hard for the club to turn around and say, no, you're not going.
No, but a fantastic fee they've got for a player that I was looking up his stats today. He's played less. He started less than 40 games at this level or above. So to get for what is up to reportedly £4 million for him is a tremendous bit of business. Once again, from Nick Hammond, who develops a bit of a knack for selling player defenders at high cost. If you think of the 4 or 5 million we got for Matt Mills and Andre Beakey for a similar fee, he seems to get rid of them. Not get rid of them, but when they do sell them on, they get a decent fee for these players.
Yeah, I think it's a great bit of business. Certainly with that sort of money coming in, like you say. I mean, I like Sean. I think he's a good, big, powerful defender, but I think him and Alex Pearce is always certainly a little bit, you're a little bit suspect about the pace they've got back there when they play together. And I kind of look at those two as maybe as a pair, not the best. I think maybe you can have one of them and then a more mobile, quicker defender alongside him, which obviously we saw on Saturday and worked very well. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a great bit of business. I think, like you said, he came in for cheap, for what, 200, 300 grand or 500 max, I think it was. He came in and they sell him down the line for sort of 3 million up front, raising it to 4 million. So, yeah, you can't complain. But I think the big thing is you want to see that money reinvested. You don't want that money to suddenly sort of disappear. When that sort of money comes in, you want it put back into the squad, whether it be on new signings or whether it be on the pressing sort of situation of renewing certain players' contracts. I think I really want to see that money spent on the squad, not just sort of disappear into the ether or wherever it goes. I'd certainly want to see it reinvested.
And on that note, did Nigel give any sort of inkling as to whether he was planning to reinvest that when you spoke to him after the Ipswich game?
Well, I didn't speak to him after the Ipswich game. I was downstairs with the players, but I was reading, obviously, the report from the press conference and Nigel saying that, as he always does, you know, we're not going to go mad and splash in the cash. And you sort of take all that with a pinch of salt. What they say in press conferences, you'll have one day a manager saying, no, we're not signing anyone. Then suddenly the day later, they unveil a signing. So I would certainly expect he'll be pushing very hard to reinvest that money. He was angry. I think angry is the right word. He was certainly frustrated at Hogwood on Thursday while this Morrison thing was all breaking. Obviously, Morrison had only been in a few hours earlier to knock on his door and say he wanted to go. And so, well, by the time we arrived, he was still quite shocked and frustrated and angry at the whole situation. And he knows his squad's tiny as it is, and then you lose a big key player like that, then it's just not ideal. So he'll be certainly pressing to get a lot of that money to reinvest in the team. He knows he needs to try and bring in another 2, 3, 4 players before the end of the transfer window in a couple of weeks' time. So I'm sure he'll be banging on the chairman's door. Well, is he still? Yeah, he's still the chairman. he'll be banging on the chairman's door and hopefully get some of that money will be coming his way.
Any names in the frame? Dean Hammond is one we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Is that still one that you think could go through?
I'm convinced that one I don't want to say convinced. I still think we'll see Reading pushing for that to happen. I do understand that Leicester will need to get someone in before they sanction that one. But also, I noticed that Dean Hammond came on at half-time yesterday against Everton and played very well and got sort of pinpointed on Match of the Day for the improvement that he brought to Leicester when he came on. So that might not actually help Reading's cause if he continues to do that. But again, Nigel, we spoke about it on Thursday at Hogwood, and again, he wouldn't deny that there was interest there. But, you know, we're going to be resting on Leicester getting someone in, but I'm sure that Reading will be desperately trying to push that one forward because he's the sort of player that ticks all the boxes. But I think there'll be other players on the agenda as well. It's certainly not just Dean Hammond. I think, like I said, Nigel, we want in 2 or 3 to come in. But I saw Oliver Norwood's been linked with Huddersfield Town, but you know, there might be something in that. I haven't heard there is, but I just look at that one and think, if you're going to be spending 1.25 million on Oliver Norwood for Huddersfield Town, why would you do that? Why didn't you just 2 weeks ago spend a similar amount of money and get Adam Clayton from Huddersfield Town? It just doesn't. I'm not sure on that one. I think that could just be this sort of internet speculation.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed till a couple of weeks, the transfer window open. You mentioned that Nigel Atkins will be going and knocking on Sir John Madejski's door. Could be another door just down the corridor, or she might even take over the office. As we've had more talk from the, I don't say they're not potential owners, but owners to be, the Tye Investment Group, and the woman at the head of it, who Tim Deller, has dubbed Sassy. According to what she goes by, what is the latest now we have with the ownership? Is it literally just a case of dotting the I's and crossing the T's from the Football League?
Yeah, I mean it pretty much is. They've had the interviews. They all went up on Thursday and had them. Who exactly that is, I don't know still, and they're very closely guarded. I mean, we went down to the boardroom, me and Tim, before Saturday's game, and were given time with Sir John and Sassima, and in the background there was also Perez was sitting around the board table, and there was a couple others there as well. I believe Omar, who's also another of the sort of big key power brokers who've brought the ties to the table, he was there. And yeah, we had a good chat with her. She was, as Sir John had called her actually before, she was quite a charming sort of lady, very, very nice. You know, what she knows about football, I'm not convinced it's very much. She certainly says she's a football fanatic in terms of sort of spectating, but in terms of what she knows about running a football club, she admits it's very little. It runs in the family though, like her daughter and son-in-law are sort of presidents of Bangkok FC, and she did let slip that her son-in-law, who was sitting next to her in the Ipswich game, actually, if you look at the photo, not Ipswich, sorry, Newport game on Tuesday night, he was celebrating next to her, is going to be helping her with the running of the club. So whether that means that he'll be permanently based over here, I'm not sure, because she's now flown home to Bangkok. And I think she might be there for a good couple of months now, which is why they got the interviews done on Thursday with the Football League. I understand they might have, the process might have swapped around a little bit. I think there's still legal stuff that needs to be done. And normally that is done before the interviews. But I think the Football League have actually allowed it to sort of swap round because she was flying back. And so they've done the interviews first. And now there's other stuff that needs to be done. So I think we're still a little bit away off getting ratification. So John was certainly saying there's still a little bit to do. He said it would be sooner rather than later. But I don't think we're expecting it this week or anything like that. So there's still a lot to be done. And I guess we're just gonna have to wait and see. But she seemed a nice lady, and you know, Sir John. I don't know if you've seen the interview that was recorded by Sky Sports. Sir John was, it was quite strange. He wasn't a couple of times butting in and answering for her, and you know, I think that's quite a key thing to look on how this is gonna run going forward. At the moment, it's all very cheery and amicable and friendly, but there comes a time surely when these people are actually running a club when, you know, she's the owner, she can't let someone answer for her or won't allow someone to answer for her. So it'll be interesting to see how the dynamic and the friendship of this partnership sort of continues going forward.
Yeah, it's been quite an aggressive, positive PR campaign from Sir John and the people running the club. And you can understand why, because there's obviously a lot of fans very sceptical after what happened with TSI and Anton Zingarevich.
Yeah.
So, the more assurances and things you get, I suppose, from those in power, it's nothing but a good thing in my eyes, and it just shows their determination to get it right. And with obviously Sir John's comments of the week of the year of, you know, one of the toughest years of his life this year. Yeah. So, you know,
I think it's also a bit for the Football League as well. I think they're certainly putting on a show for the Football League, saying that this is the figurehead, this is the woman, she's very nice, successful in business, she's educated at the finest schools across the world, at Harvard and in England. And you know, I think it's certainly a big show to the Football League as well that, yeah, these are nice, genuine people, and please let them take control of our club.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, as much as I've loved asking you this question every week, I would like to go into a podcast not talking about a takeover for once, but why break the habit of a lifetime? Anyway, moving on to back to football matters, it's Huddersfield on Tuesday night, which is why we're recording this now. Back in the league, Huddersfield not had a great start. They've been beaten twice in the league. They said they've lost one of their key players, Adam Clayton. And on paper, this is a game that Reading should be going into looking for 3 points. But just heading into this game, obviously the squad is stretched to say the least. I think my dad said that the bench on Saturday was more like a crash, the substitutes bench. Are we expecting any sort of reinforcements heading into the game? Is Danny Guthrie any close to coming back?
No, Danny Guthrie's still a couple of weeks away. He's basically now got a hamstring injury. It was a calf, obviously. They brought him on for the half an hour against Wigan. We thought, here we go. He's edging back into the first team. But then I think on Monday morning, he complained of having a tight hamstring, or the top of the hamstring, basically. And he's been taken out again. And he walked past me down in the mix zone after the game on Tuesday night. And I didn't interview him, but I spoke to him as he's walking upstairs. And he was saying 2 weeks. And Atkins kind of said similar on last Thursday at Hogwarts. So I think we're still some way off seeing him. Anton Ferdinand, I believe, is down to play this week, not in the first team, but I think he's going to have about 45 minutes for the under 21. So he's obviously stepping up his game time now. He's obviously fit. There's no injury or anything. He's just not match fit. So that's that's a plus if he's starting to get some game time. Jamie Mackey, I don't think we'll see him this week. It's certainly not against Huddersfield, and I'm not sure about Notts Forest either. Actually, saying that, he's probably not even available for Notts Forest, is he? Because he's on loan. I'm not sure if that's part of the deal.
Yeah, it's usually written into the contracts, isn't it?
Yeah, so I imagine he wouldn't. I think we'll probably be looking at either the Capital One Cup tie at Scunthorpe or Middlesbrough to see him. And they're the closest. You know, you're talking about Gem and Danny Williams and G. They're obviously sort of a long way off. Not a long way off for Gem. Hopefully Gem might be by the end of next month, but the other two are certainly sort of November time.
Yeah. So what are you expecting from Huddersfield? Are you expecting them to bounce back from that disappointing start to the season, or is this a game that Reading really should be winning?
Well, Reading should certainly be winning. I mean, I tipped in my predictions for Huddersfield to go down this year, which will probably mean they get promoted. But I'm not surprised to see they've struggled. And on top of that, they've also, like you said, lost Adam Clayton, who's just a superb footballer. And they're going to miss him. I saw there that they obviously won in the cup, and Naki Wells bagged himself a hat-trick, a player who I rate massively, is one of the best players I saw at the Maddad last season. So he's going to be someone that the Reading have to get a handle on Tuesday night. He gave Morrison and Pearce a torrid time last time. So I think I'm not surprised Morrison's probably scarpered before he's come back into town. And they're going to have to watch him. But I think if they can keep him quiet, then I think this is a game Reading should be winning. And it'd be fantastic if they do. If they end the first three games with 7 points out of nine, I think we can all we'll all agree that's been one hell of a start.
Absolutely. Well, we've been logging our predictions so far this season. First game up, we both got it quite spectacularly wrong, as just about the habit of a lifetime. But we both predicted wins against Ipswich, and we got them, although the scores are a little bit off. I think we both went for 2-1s. Mm-hmm. And so heading into this game, what are you going to put on the line?
I am going to say Reading are going to win.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stick with my 2-1 prediction from Ipswich. I think it'll be 2-1 again.
Yeah, and just to be different, I'll say Reading 1-0, a 1-0 win for Reading. So we'll go for that. If it doesn't happen, apologies. But I've resolved myself to not bet at the stadium anymore. I don't think I won a single bet last season. And I don't think I would have gone anywhere near Jake Taylor 1-0 on Saturday. So happy with that, with that man.
Just on that, that was a brilliant moment, I thought, for Jake.
Oh, yeah.
I've been speaking to Jake for so long about that. He's dreamt of that goal for an awful long time. Even after he scored at Wickham, he was sort of saying that doesn't count, it doesn't count, I've got to do it in a competitive game, and he finally did, and he was absolutely made up. It's just been nice in those two games, home games. You had Craig Tanner doing it on the Tuesday night, and then Jake doing it on the Saturday night, and it's just, it just sums up what's good about Reading, really, and what's great about the academy, and it was a great moment.
Yeah, and what they bring to the team as well, the amount of energy and the work rate is something fantastic, and it goes to show, a lot of people are clamouring for, someone like a Royston Genta to come back into the fold, but when you see people like Ryan Edwards busting a gut, even when they don't get that many touches of the ball, it's so encouraging, and that is one of the benefits of bringing through your own players, because they have got that extra bit of desire and the extra bit of drive, and it's great to see.
Oh, it definitely is, and it is, the fans just have that little bit more rapport with them as well. They know they're one of their own, and they're really genuinely, like Jake kissed the badge afterwards when he scored that goal, and a lot of players do that, but he genuinely means it, and his family are all Reading fans sitting in the corner, and it was just a special moment.
Exactly, and fingers crossed there'll be plenty more to come starting on Tuesday.
Indeed.
But that is it for us for now. We'll hopefully get together on Friday and look ahead to the Forest game, although I am at Reading Festival this week, so that will be subject to change depending on what time I finally wake up on Friday.
If my wife's gone into labour by then, I might be off the radar as well, but we'll see. She's
indeed
not due for another 2 weeks. 2 weeks yesterday she's due, so hopefully she'll hold on, so we'll be able to fit that match in.
Yeah, we'll be able to sneak that one in, but we'll keep you updated on the Twitter feed as to our plans. Apologies again, didn't have a show on Friday. I was in Cornwall, and for those of you that have been down there, you'll know internet coverage isn't exactly the the easiest thing to come by. But anyway, that about wraps it up for this week. Charles, thank you very much. Anything we can look forward to in the paper this week?
No, just the usual stuff. Obviously, all the reaction to Tuesday night's game, that will all be all over the web, and web chatting on Wednesday as usual. And yeah, just log on, getreading.co.uk.
Excellent. And for more fan opinion analysis, please head over to thetarlesden.com. That's it for us. And here's to hopefully 3 points on Tuesday. Take care, guys.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.